Craig Robinson, and he's going to be telling us about searches for compact binary and spiral using complete IMR waveforms.
Okay, so can everyone hear me? Cool, I think the mic's on. I can hear myself reverberating. So. Right, so as Steve said, I'm Craig, and I'm speaking today on behalf of the LSC and the Virgo collaboration, and I'm going to be talking about the searches that we do for sort of high-mass compact binary coalescences using complete waveforms containing in spirals, mergers, and ring domes. Okay, so this is a basic outline of the talk. So first of all, I'll just sort of outline the general searches that we do. I'll talk briefly about some of the ways that we've searched for high mass in spirals and compact binary coalescences in the past, and why we decided to switch from them and switch to using the approach that we currently do now. I'll say something about the use of numerical relativity waveforms in gravitational wave searches. Obviously, they can be very useful to us in a number of ways, and I'll just sort of say one or two words about that. I'll talk about the some ongoing searches for compact binaries using templates which are inspired by numerical relativity waveforms. I'm mainly going to concentrate there on the search for the fifth LIGO science run, or S5 as we call it. I'll mention some work that's been going on to try and pull together the burst searches and the searches run by the InSpiral group for high mass compact binaries. As you get to high masses, the signals become quite bursty, and so one might expect a burst search to do pretty well in finding such signals as well. And so I'll say something about efforts that have been going on to bring these efforts together. And I'll also sort of give a brief status of all these things and some things that will be going on in the future. Okay, so before we get into the talk proper, I thought I'd throw up the LIGO sensitivity curve and show how it's evolved over time. And so as you can see, way back in 2002, when the first science run took place, we were way up at the blue curve. But as time's gone on, the detectors have got better and better. And when we got to the fifth science run, the detectors had pretty much achieved their design sensitivity across much of the spectrum, not quite at low frequencies, but pretty much everywhere else. This purple curve is a recent curve from the current S6 run taken in February, and as you can see, the detectors are now operating at a sensitivity which is better than the original initial LIGO design PSD. Okay, so within the compact binary coalescence search group, we've got three main search areas, I would say. The first is what we call the low mass search. And that's a search for systems with component masses between 1 and 34 solar masses. And the search is restricted to a maximum total mass of 35 solar masses. Now, within that search region, the in-spiral part of the signal is very long, particularly in the binary neutron star region. The merger frequency is quite high, and so within that region we feel reasonably happy with using the standard post-Newtonian stationary phase approximation frequency domain template to perform those searches, what we know as Taylor F2. Since we're reasonably happy with that, within that regime, I won't mention any more about that search during this talk, although it's a very, very good search, and I'm sure you'll hear about it many times elsewhere. We also have the high mass search, which covers the mass space between, again, with component masses starting from 1 but going up to 99, with the total mass of the search restricted to a region between 25 solar masses and 100 solar masses. And notice there's a little bit of overlap with the low mass search at the high mass end of the low mass search, where the merger part might be important, so we cover that region. But then we go up to 100 solar masses. Now, for that search, we use in-spiral merger ring-down templates of the EOBNR type. I'll say a little bit more about that in a few slides. And then there's also the ring-down search. And this search is basically performed by filtering with damped sinusoids of a particular frequency and Q factor. And in fact, that search is gridded up in terms of F and Q, and that search is for signals way up to hundreds of solar masses. But for the majority of this talk, I'm going to concentrate on the high mass search. Okay, so this is a sort of brief overview of the high mass search. So we're searching for binary black hole and black hole neutron star type binaries. And as I mentioned, we're searching for systems with a total mass between 25 and 100 solar masses and with component masses between 1 and 99 solar masses. Now, the rate of these systems is very, very uncertain, but the sort of estimate that's been thrown around is sort of between 0.01 to 1 per Milky Way equivalent galaxy per mega year. Now, if you take a sort of a system which is sort of on the very low mass end of this search, just out of it, so a 10-10 binary, that's detectable currently up to about 125 megaparsecs if the orientation is favorable. But for the even higher mass systems, you can detect them out to even further distances, in fact, quite colossal distances. For all systems within this range, the merger and ring down occur in the sensitive part of the LIGO band. And so having a good handle on what's going on with the merger and ring down is particularly important for this search if we're going to do a match filter search. So if you look at the plot on the right-hand side of the screen here, this shows the what we call the horizon distance, which is the distance you'd be able to see an optimally oriented, optimally located system in the sky at an SNR of 8. And so we've got that plotted on the y-axis, and we've got it plotted as a function of total mass. And the red curve shows the horizon distance if you just consider the in-spiral-only part of the signal. And the blue curve is for the EOBNR in-spiral merger ring-down waveforms. And as you can see, as you go up to higher masses, including the merger and the ring-down, buys you an awful lot of sensitivity to such systems. It should be noted that this plot was created using the initial LIGO design PSD. And as we've seen, the current detectors haven't quite met the design PSD at low frequencies. That would have an impact on the sensitivity of this search. So this might not quite be representative of how we do in real life, but it's sort of a good guide, I would say. Okay, so those of you who've been following the searches, you'd know that the S5 search, which we're going to talk about here, isn't the first time that we've searched for what we call the so-called high-mass binary black holes. For example, in the S3 and S4 searches, systems were searched for up to a total mass of 80 solar masses. But in those days, we didn't have the in-spiral merger ring down stuff. So what did we do? Well, there were a number of things which were considered and some of which were used, one of which was searching just using in-spiral only post-Newtonian approximants as templates. After all, this is what we do for the low-mass search, so why not just take it up to the high-mass search? Well, one thing is, as I'm sure you all know, that as you get to the late-stage in-spiral approach in merger, the various different types of PN approximants behave somewhat differently. They're not the same. They don't give you the same waveform as you go to sort of late times. And so it sort of begs the question, which one do you take? Moreover, using these things, you effectively ignore the merger and the ring down. And as we've seen, if you just use in spiral only, the sensitivity falls off. Whereas if you include the whole thing, it keeps growing. So that's not necessarily a good thing. So another thing which was tried was searching using phenomenological templates as a sort of detection template family. This was how the S2 and S3 and S4 searches were done. They used the phenomenological templates of Bonanno, Chen, and Vallisneri, and these were frequency domain templates, which were sort of motivated by the standard post-Newtonian approximant, but they were parameterized by parameters psi 0, psi 3, and then a frequency cutoff. And it was found that these phenomenological templates had good matches with all the different PN approximants and various things. And so in that sense, they should have been pretty good at finding things. But there wasn't a one-to-one mapping back from these phenomenological parameters to given masses. So it could raise slightly tricky questions in interpretation. Another thing is, because these things were able to sort of match well with all the PN approximants and stuff, they also match pretty well with glitches. And so one ended up with quite high background rates, which limited sensitivity. In addition, these waveforms still didn't include the merger and ring down, which ideally we'd like to do. One could also search for ring downs of the final black hole, and you can do that up to very high masses, way beyond the upper limit of the current high mass search. But within the region of the high mass search, it means you'd be sort of ignoring the extra information and the extra SNR, which would be provided by the in-spiral and merger part. Not ideal within this mass range, at least. There are also burst searches which have been done and are ongoing. I won't mention too much about these now, but may come back to those a little bit later. Back then, also, when the pipelines were tested using injections of signals into the data stream, we used to inject in-spiral-only signals, or maybe in-spiral/plunge, but certainly not including the full merger and ring down. And so one might argue that even running these searches, testing them against such waveforms, might not necessarily have been a complete test of how they were performing. Okay, so the numerical relativity simulations are very, very useful for the searches in a couple of ways, actually. So one thing is having these various waveforms provided by numerical relativity allows new template families to be developed. For example, the EOBNRs, the phenomenological templates, et cetera, they can be calibrated to these numerical relativity simulations. They include the full merger and ring down. And so now we have them, we can search with them, and we can inject them into our pipelines and see how we do. And that's a very, very good thing. Also, you can take the numerical relativity waveforms, inject them directly into data, maybe as hybrids or maybe just as is, inject them straight into the data and run the pipelines of your choice on it and see how you do in pulling these things out. And doing things such as that and interfacing with the numerical relativity and data analysis efforts is sort of one of the goals of the Ninja project. And Mike Boyle talked about that yesterday, and I'm sure most of you will have seen that. Okay, so we'll come on to the specific S5 high mass search now. And that's the first search we've done, which uses templates incorporating the in-spiral merger and ring down phases. So the LIGO S5 data set was taken from November 2005 to November 2007. And within that time, as we saw earlier, the detectors were pretty much at the initial LIGO design sensitivity. Across the course of the run, we ended up with over a year of triple coincident data. And so that's pretty good. We've got a lot of stuff to search, and that's quite nice. This plot on the on the right here is just an indication of the sort of horizon distance for binary neutron stars across the run. Okay, so as I mentioned, within this search, as a search template, we use the EOBNR in spiral merger ring down model. Now, we've heard quite a bit about this already, and there are a couple of talks later on, such as by Yi Pan, about newer versions of such waveforms. But basically, the effective one-body approach sort of takes the two-body problem and maps it onto an effective metric and uses this resummed Hamiltonian, which you get to calculate the binary dynamics during in-spiral and from which you get the waveform. And you integrate this system up as far as the light ring. And as it says, so you get the waveform from the trajectory, which comes out of the equations of motion, essentially. And then once you reach the light ring, you attach a ring down, which consists of a superposition of quasi-normal modes. And you smoothly attach this ring down to the in-spiral, which is generated near the light ring. Now, as we've heard, there's a proliferation of models of the EOB tuned to numerical relativity type. And so it becomes ever more important to state which one we're actually using. And so the one which is used currently in the search is the one based on Buonanno et al. From PRD in 2007. This model was calibrated to waveforms with mass ratios between 1 to 1 and 4 to 1 from the NASA Goddard group back then. And this plot on the right shows a frequency domain comparison between the numerical waveform and the EOBNR, which is the red curve. No, that's not the only inspiral merger wing down waveform which was at our disposal. We also had the phenomenological waveforms. The ones which were used mainly in this search were the ones from Adjit et al. In 2008. These waveforms were used only for injections, basically just to test our search against different waveforms and see how we did. So these waveforms were created first by creating hybrid waveforms from stitching post-Newtonian waveforms to numerical relativity in the final few orbits. We've heard a lot about that over the past couple of days. And then you take the phenomenological waveforms and fit them to the hybrid waveforms in the frequency domain. And the inspiral part has a similar structure to the standard SPA waveforms. The ring down part decays as a Lorentzian. The undetermined coefficients in the waveforms are calibrated to match the hybrid waveforms from PN and numerical relativity. And the waveforms were parameterized by the masses, so there were no sort of spurious degrees of freedom coming in. And the model which we used here was calibrated to AEI-Jena numerical waveforms and with mass ratios from 1 to 1 to 4 to 1. Okay, so the approach used for the high mass search is similar to the low mass search or the standard in spiral pipeline, where it's basically a match filtering approach to pull out the signals buried in the noise. We generate a template bank, which is laid out to cover the complete mass range. Nominally, we choose the bank so that the templates are laid out such that we have a minimal match between templates of 0.97, so a maximum loss of SNR of 3%, essentially. And then you take these templates and you filter the data with the templates. Once you've done that, you'll end up with a list of triggers above a designated signal-to-noise ratio threshold. You do that for all the detectors, and you'll have lists of what we call triggers from each detector, and then you can search for coincidences between the different detectors. For an event to be considered noteworthy, we require events to be coincident in at least two detectors. Once you've passed them through the coincidence stage, we run a second step of filtering, but this time we apply signal-based vetoes, such as a chi-squared test to the templates to get rid of any junk, and then we perform a second coincidence test based on what survives that filtering. Now, having said that we choose the bank to have a match of 0.97, it should be noted that for this particular search, at the high mass end, the match isn't quite 0.97. The bank which we use is laid out using the same parameter space metric as was designed for the low mass search, albeit integrated up to a slightly higher frequency. And although in the sort of, well, for most of the parameter space, actually, it does pretty well and gives us the desired match. At the high mass end, we don't do so well, and the match drops off, although not by too much. It's not too critical, but nonetheless, the bank isn't quite as good up in that region as we may expect it to be. Typically, within this search, we end up with about 2,000 templates per detector. Okay, so this search was performed by splitting up the data, which has essentially lasted over 2 years, and splitting it up into chunks of 2 months' duration. This was partly to spread the load of running the search amongst many people. We had 12 people who ran different chunks of this data, and so that was quite nice. After performing the search, you'd end up with what you consider your best candidates according to some ranking, which I'll come to later, and you'll take these sort of loudest coincident triggers, and then you'll subject them to further scrutiny, various different follow-ups, and such like. In the absence of detection, we'll set some sort of upper limits on the rate of binary coalescences in this mass range, although this is subject to a number of caveats. For example, we haven't properly taken into account spin in the search. There are newer waveforms which have come along, which may differ quite significantly to the ones which we were using for Inspiral Merger Ringdale, which I'll come back to. And so there's a number of caveats, and we need to be very careful about that and state these things explicitly. So to estimate the sort of rate of background triggers, we do what's called time slides, where essentially what we do is we take the data streams of each detector, slide one of them relative to the other by a few seconds, and then again check for coincidences. Now, because you've slid the detectors relative to each other, any coincidences you get can't be due to real gravitational waves, and so anything you get between these sites then must be sort of accidental coincidences, if you will. And that's a reasonably decent way of estimating the background for your search. You do, say, several hundred of these time slides, and then that will give you an estimate of your background. And we also inject fake signals into the data to test our efficiency at detecting signals. And so we used two injection families for this. We used the EOBNR waveforms, and we used them right across the entire parameter space for which we search. We also used the phenomenological waveforms. But for them, if you push the mass ratio too high, we noticed that you ended up with some strange effects creeping in. So for the phenomenological injections, we restricted ourselves to mass ratios from 1 to 1 up to 10 to 1. Okay, so within this search, we use, as I said, we check for coincidences between the various detector sites. And for an event to be considered a true candidate, then it must be seen in at least two detectors. Now, obviously, due to noise and various things such as that, you wouldn't expect parameters to agree exactly between the two different detectors. So essentially what we do is we compare the parameters of various triggers coming from different detectors and check, for example, the masses and the coalescence time agree to within a certain tolerance. Now, we don't just set straight windows on these parameters, which we could do. We actually use the parameter space metric to set sort of ellipsoidal windows to determine coincidence. Now, the reason we do that is because you might expect the accuracy of the parameters to change as you go across the parameter space. For example, you'd expect the windows to be a lot tighter at low masses and not so tight at high masses. And using this metric takes that into account. In addition, using the metric also allows us to take into account the sort of covariances and correlations between the different parameters, And so using that information allows us to sort of end up with smaller coincidence windows in some sense for their size, and so you can cut out quite a bit of background using that. Again, I should stress that this metric here was, that we used for this search was the one designed for the low mass search, albeit integrated to a different frequency. So we're aware that that might not be the exact thing that we should be using in this search for this. So to account for that, we've actually loosened the coincidence test in comparison to what would be used in the low mass search. And having tested the pipeline with injections and all that sort of thing, we see that that we do okay using this test as is. Okay, so as I mentioned at the second stage, we apply a chi-squared test to the various triggers. Now, this chi-squared test is essentially a goodness of fit test between the data and the template. And the way we do that in this search is that we split the template into 10 frequency bands, which sort of contain equal power in some sense. And essentially, in the search, you have two templates, a sine phase and a cosine phase, and so you split each of them. And if you filter each of these bands against the data, you sort of end up with these Y and Z variables, which one is from filtering with the sine template, one with the cosine template. And it's obvious that if you add all the Y squareds and Z squareds together, you'll end up with the signal-to-noise ratio squared. So essentially what you do is, since you know that in the original template each of these bands contained equal power, you essentially construct these delta Ys by subtracting the SNR you got in that band from the fraction of the SNR, essentially. And you do that for both both phases. And then the chi-squared statistic is defined as shown there. So to talk about it in a sort of hand-wavy kind of way, you'd expect for a perfectly matched signal and template, in the absence of noise, the value of chi-squared would be zero. For a signal in the presence of noise, the chi-squared would have a low value, low in inverted commas, scales with the signal-to-noise ratio, but you'd expect it to be kind of low. And for a high SNR glitch, you'd expect the chi-squared to take a high value. And so you can basically use this chi-squared as a threshold and say if the chi-squared crosses a certain value, you can throw out the trigger. Now, in practice, in this search, the chi-squared test doesn't work quite as well as it does for the low-mass searches. So although there is a thresholding, it basically just throws out only the most egregious stuff. In the most part, the chi-squared is used along with the signal-to-noise ratio to create a new statistic, which we call the effective SNR. Now, this effective SNR is a combination of the signal-to-noise ratio and the chi-squared, and we choose it to better separate the signal, the injected signals and the time slides, and thereby allow us to hopefully detect more signals above the background. The form of the effective SNR is given here. For those who may have seen this formula in the past in conjunction with low-mass searches may note that this 50 in the denominator here is different from the low-mass search, where they use 250. The reason for that change is that we did some tests and we just found that using 50 allowed us to detect more stuff for a given false alarm rate. So we changed it to 50 for this search. So that's how you'd calculate the effect of SNR for a single detector. To get the sort of combined effect of SNR, you just take the sum of the squares between the different detectors, and you'll end up with a bunch of coincident triggers with combined effect of SNRs and a bunch of time slide coincident triggers with effect of SNRs. And then what we do is we sort of break the parameter space up into three mass bins, each of which have roughly equal background in them. And then you finally rank the candidates according to the false alarm rate, which you calculate from the time slides. This plot on the right here is just showing the chi-squared versus the SNR for injections, which is the red, and background time slides, which is the black. Okay, so much for that. But we know that a lot of time has passed since 2007. And since then, we've got more recent simulations, numerical relativity simulations. And accordingly, we've also got improved analytic fits to those waveforms. For example, there's going to be various talks today about such newer waveforms. So sort of begs the question, how do the old waveforms and the new waveforms differ? And what sort of effect would that have on this search? And it turns out that the differences in SNR from the older waveforms which we used and the newer ones can be pretty damn significant, actually, sometimes as much as 50%. This plot on the right here is a comparison of the SNRs between the old phenomenological waveforms which we used and the newer ones, the sort of Phenom B, using an S5 PSD. And so this is sort of the fractional distance in SNR, and as for various different mass ratios. So as you can see, for sort of 1-to-1 ratios, it's, I don't know, roughly it gets up to about 15% as the highest masses. But for the as you go to higher mass ratios, the differences can become very significant, up to say 50%. Now, this is quite significant. We've got to bear this in mind when we interpret our results, because obviously all of our tests of sensitivity, or most of them at least, have been done using the old waveforms. And so this is sort of an interpretational headache, and we're trying to work out the best way to deal with this as we speak. Okay, so much for that. Going into the future, we've got a number of improvements we'd like to make. The LIGO S6 run is currently ongoing. Virgo's VSR2 run took place during the last half of 2009, and Virgo VSR3 is about to commence very soon, I think next month. And so analysis on these data sets is ongoing and will start, and we'd like to get some improvements to the search in as we can. Now, one of the improvements which we hope to get in is to rank the candidate events using a multivariate statistical classifier, wherein instead of trying to construct clever statistics ourselves to separate signal and background, which we've done a pretty good job with in the past, but could do better if we took into account more information. We instead throw, for example, the SNRs, the chi-squareds, the masses, the differences in masses, differences in end times, etc., into the multivariate statistical classifier, train it on a set of time slides and injections, and then sort of allow that to classify our candidates. And initial indications suggest that once this is going properly, it should have the potential to significantly improve the sensitivity of the search. We now have improved EOB and phenomenological waveforms, which are available in the literature, and in fact, some of them have even been coded up within our libraries. And it's important to get these into the search as soon as possible to take into account some of the things which we've just talked about. There are IMR waveforms with spin effects and also higher harmonics, which are becoming available or in development. And we should definitely throw these at the search and see how we do. And another thing we'd like to do is improve the template placement at higher masses. As I said, the current placement is dependent on the same metric as the low mass search, and it sort of goes a little bit awry at high masses. So in the future, it might be worth exploring using a metric specifically for this, which could also be used in the coincidence test, or maybe switching to some sort of random placement for templates, which is also something which is being looked at. Okay, so much for CBC searches, but what about the burst searches? So as we go into the high mass regime, the very high mass end of the high mass search, the signals become very, very short within the sensitive band. This plot on the right here is a whitened 50-50 solar mass template, and so it's basically the template which has been weighted by the LIGO PSD. And as you can see, it's pretty short and pretty bursty. And so one might expect that the burst searches would perform well at searching for such signals. Moreover, because the burst searches make less assumptions about the form of the signal, it might be that those searches are better able to take into account effects such as spin. We don't know. We haven't fully tested that yet. With the various pipelines, but it's an interesting question to ask. So the IMR group within the LIGO Virgo collaborations have been trying to pull together the CBC and burst group efforts to search for such signals. They sort of aim to compare and contrast the different approaches and to assess how to best combine the approaches to aid detection confidence when an event is found, rather than having several different pipelines not quite sure what to say about each other's events. There's been a lot of work done to develop a lot of infrastructure to sort of allow apples to apples comparisons between burst pipelines and CBC pipelines. There were a lot of differences in the way, for example, found events were classified. A lot of stuff was needed to be done to make sure that you were actually comparing like with like in terms of found events at a fixed false alarm rate. And a lot of work has been done to sort of iron out all this stuff, and I think we're now at a point where the burst and in-spiral pipelines can be compared meaningfully. And you can sort of see how they do relative to each other. Also, all these searches will participate in Ninja 2, and it'll be interesting to sort of compare and contrast how we do there. Okay, so in summary, in the S5 run, we searched for binary black holes with total mass between 25 to 100. Solar masses using in-spiral merger ring down templates. And at that time, the LIGO interferometers were operating at design sensitivity, and we had over a year of triple coincident data. And this was the first search which was which we performed that used complete IMR templates. Hopefully, we'll have some public results to present later in the year. In the future, we hope to make improvements to the search, including using a multivariate classifier to rank candidates and using newer improved waveforms as templates and injections. Efforts are underway to pull together the burst and CBC efforts to search for such systems. and numerical relativity has a significant contribution to make for these searches, both for informing the development of newer and better search templates and injections, and also injecting numerical waveforms allows us to test the different pipelines and allow us to compare the performance of different approaches. Okay, thanks. Any questions? And before you ask, my picks for the day are Ivory Coast and, being controversial, Portugal.
Any questions?
So in this comparison, you talked about the comparison between the different, I guess, phenomenological templates, and you showed this plot where there was a 50% difference in SNR. So this was between, what exactly were you comparing?
So Ajit actually did this study, so if he's in the room, he would be able to say better, but I believe it was between the old IMR Phenom A waveforms and the IMR Phenom B waveforms without spin.
Okay, because I cannot believe that there is a 50% error in the basically the amplitude of these waveforms. The mass ratio is where there is numerical data.
So I think the main reason for that actually was because the SNR is weighted by the PSD. I think the significant thing is that the merger amplitudes between these different waveforms disagreed by quite a bit. Not necessarily right across the waveform, but the mergers were of quite different amplitudes. And as you go to high masses in our search, it's basically only the merger which is in band. And so it sort of exaggerates the difference between them. So it's not necessarily a 50%
difference. But 50%, there's no way there's a 50% difference in the amplitude.
These are the numbers, because I cross-checked the numbers with Ajith, and we got quite similar numbers, not exactly the same, but 50% I also don't believe. I think it was on the order of 40% at mass ratio 1 to 10. It was anyway wrong, yeah. But so now...
Note that it is 1 to 10 where it gets
the numbers,
that.
But I think at mass ratio 1 to 4, so I'm a bit surprised. I think it should be on the order of 20, because, I mean, as you said, it's amplified at the merger, but I think it was like 20-25% at mass ratio 4, so this I'm a bit surprised. So we should check it again, what really the numbers are.
So the original phenomena, as I understood it, used the quadrupole amplitude, right? So this has an 8% or so error between that and the true amplitude, and then there will be some other uncertainty. So 20% I can believe, but yeah, 50% is... not right.
So essentially, it's because we don't have the correct metric worked out and coded up, and so we just used the one we had. When we tested this, we found that we didn't lose much efficiency across the parameter space using this metric, and the coincidence test seems to work okay when it comes to looking at the found injections. So we felt reasonably okay to run with it, but it's certainly something that can be improved in the future and probably should be. Yeah, well, certainly it is something that we hope to improve for future searches.
Any further questions? Okay, then let's thank Craig again, back here at 10:30 for the next session.